I'm Jed Lipinski. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here. After investing billions to light up our network, T-Mobile is America's largest 5G network. Plus, right now, you can switch, keep your phone, and we'll pay it off up to $800. See how you can save on every plan versus Verizon and AT&T at T-Mobile.com/keep and switch.
Up to four lines via virtual prepaid card. Allowed 15 days. Qualifying unlocked device, credit, service, ported 90 plus days with device and eligible carrier and timely redemption required. Card has no cash access and expires in 6 months.
We were supposed to be ready to go, but clearly working our way to being ready. Welcome in to Gwynn and Chris, Tony Gwynn Jr., Matt Scravey, Chris Ello, still on vacay. Padres shortly will be headed up north to Los Angeles for a three-game set. Padres with a terrific, terrific homestand. 5-1.
It's pretty good.
Pretty good.
And because they beat the Astros, they won that series. They did what they're supposed to do.
Everybody got their sweep.
They did what they were supposed to do. They had a couple comebacks. They had to battle adversity on Friday night after everybody thought the game was over. They tie it up. Padres win. Fernando walk off. So many great things.
A lot of good things, man. Padres just continue to keep rolling along. I mean, there's really not a lot different about what's happening. Offense continues to do enough. They haven't had one of those, like, explosive. Well, maybe they have. Let me go through my scorecards that I have here. But the offense most certainly has been consistent during this time span.
I'm going to get you on camera while you're going through that.
Yeah, you go ahead. You get me on camera. They put up six on Saturday, but that they had to do that, and they got those last couple of late. It was nice to see them do that. And I guess the point I'm trying to make is the Padres can win in a whole bunch of different ways and have won in a whole bunch of different ways. You got to be pretty excited and confident where this team is right now. This is probably going to be one of the setting up to be one of the best weeks of baseball, you know, for the Padres if they can pull it off. And, you know, the National League West is a real thing right now with six games to go. Three games back, six games to go. By the way, the Dodgers, it would have been two games back had the Dodgers not come back, went back to back in the bottom of the ninth against the Rockies in yesterday's game. Shohei goes deep, Mookie Betts goes deep. They win the game, and it keeps the Padres at three. So, I mean, it's certainly not impossible. It's a climb. Let's say the Padres sweep the Dodgers. I imagine the emotion of pulling that off with three to go would be pretty high. And then to turn around and then have to play the Diamondbacks, who in all likeliness will be fighting for their playoff souls. Because remember, we're three games ahead of them right now. They would love to host a series and do the same thing the Padres are trying to do right now. So two teams, three teams total. The two series between these teams are going to be a lot of fun. It's great.
I mean, I just really, it's crazy to me after everything that's happened this year that the Padres have a chance at the NL West after everything. Like going into the final week, you couldn't ask for more. Because I think coming into the year, all of us were hoping for a wild card, not a division. And now they're on the doorstep of possibly taking the division.
Yeah, I mean, I hadn't thought about it until Bill Center tweeted it the other day. 1996
explain this to me.
It starts to roll. So the difference is the Padres faced the Dodgers with the last three games of the season with the division on the line in 1996. Padres at that point hadn't been to the playoffs since '84. The difference here this time around is the Padres are facing with three games after their series. So the Padres end up, or I think the Padres are two games down from the Dodgers going in the last three games. They win Friday night. They win Saturday night on a single by my pops, and then they win on Sunday. Excuse me, it was Saturday day. It was a Fox game.
Mm.
They win the following day on Sunday on a double by my Uncle Chris, and that put the Padres. They gave the Padres the division, and then their reward was to play the Cardinals, and then they got swept in that one.
The reward, huh?
But, yeah, because prior to us beating the Cardinals in, what was that, 2020? And when they had 2020?
Yeah.
Like, the Cardinals had dominated the Padres from that point on through the early 2000s in the playoffs. So that was kind of, remember, I don't know if you remember, that was kind of like getting over the hump. But I digress. It's setting up similarly, but the Padres just have three more games after. And those three games after will probably be just as significant. Because even if the Padres then go sweep the Dodgers to tie, now you're facing the Diamondbacks, who you got a loss there. Because I think the Dodgers end, if I'm not mistaken, they end with somebody weak.
The Rockies.
There you go.
In Colorado.
There you go. Which is probably a benefit to the Padres, because anything can happen in that stadium there.
The Rockies were trying to play spoiler all weekend, and
I respect that. Good for them.
Yeah. But they didn't accomplish it. I mean,
they could only, it's funny. It's like Dave Marcus was going off on.
Oh, what did Dave have to say?
Dave Marcus was going off on the Marlins. He's going off on
the Marlins
because the Braves lose.
Yes,
we would have had the chance to clinch yesterday. Now it turned out the Mets didn't, but but as I told him, I was like, "Hey, man, they're one of the worst teams for a reason. Like, I know they are trying to play spoiler, but they are behind the eight ball. They have almost lost 100 games this season. So I mean, it's not as though it's a team that is really dependable. It's like." They're depending on us depending on the Marlins to take care. It's almost like the Diamondbacks depending on the White Sox to come in here and handle the Padres.
And sweep
right?
us. It,
yeah, it's just it's not likely to happen.
No, that's a good point. You can't expect bad teams to win.
Right. It'd be different if it was a team. I mean, these are two of the worst teams in baseball right now. So,
yeah.
Nonetheless, Padres. Only this was a homestand in which they could have lost ground, but they end up gaining ground really all the way around. Gain ground in the division, game ground in the wild card. Padres' magic number is one. They can clinch a playoff spot with a win tomorrow night in Los Angeles. That is the only way they can clinch tomorrow. If they lose. Even a loss by the Braves to the Mets tomorrow would leave open the remote possibility of a three-way tie between the three teams that would end with the Padres as the odd team out.
I mean, that's crazy.
That's the, like, pessimistic viewpoint of whoever out there.
When I read that this morning, there's a shiver that went down my spine because I'm like, wait a second.
Yeah.
You're telling me there's a chance they could be the odd team out?
There is really not even a sign that could even happen.
No, there's no sign. That's
the thing, right? The Padres aren't playing in a way that could even lend you to believe that there's a possibility that could happen. And quite frankly, they haven't played that way since the beginning of the second half. I take it back. Since after the first game, the 7-0 drubbing in Cleveland.
Yes.
After that point, they haven't played. They haven't shown any signs of that at any point.
Bryce Miller wrote an article today in the San Diego Union-Tribune about why this team is a matchup nightmare for other teams.
It is.
And the quotes throughout really tell me where this clubhouse is at, because you got Donovan Solano, who's been on a lot of playoff teams. He said that this is a complete team. A lot of the other guys were saying that this is a complete team. No one wants to face the bullpen. No one wants to face the lineup right now. I mean, the Padres, we always talk about, it's the team that gets hot or is playing the best when they go into the playoffs that is dangerous. And the Padres, to me, are one of the most dangerous teams. I had a friend text me yesterday, man, they barely beat the White Sox. And my friend's listening, so that's your voice for you. They barely beat the White Sox. But how I looked at it yesterday was they needed to execute to win a game. And they did. It doesn't matter that it came. It was just nice to see them execute, get the sack fly, do all the things that they need to do to win, and that's what happened.
By the way, that's what they do all the time.
They're playing great baseball right
now. That is one of the best things about watching this team pitch on a nightly on a daily basis, or hit, or just play baseball in general, is that they play the game well. They play like they enjoy each other. They play. Their strategy seems to be woven together within the at bats that they have. It's really a lot of fun to watch, and that's what made the Astros series so fun to watch, because you got to watch two teams that was like high level baseball happening right there.
Yeah,
it was a taste of what you know could possibly become playoff time, perhaps longer. Now, the other storyline going is one that I don't necessarily believe in storyline.
I was actually thinking you weren't going to bring it up. I'm going to bring it up.
Robert Suarez had a good night, a good day yesterday, which isn't uncommon. He's had a lot of those, but I think the good day, bad day has kind of made people a little unnerved, and I get it. Changed it up a little bit, which is why I'm not really worried about it. Like, it's one thing if, like, you just can't get anybody out or you can't command a baseball. Everything he has still is, you know, plus. You just got to mix it up a little bit. And that's what he did. Friday night he got hurt after he threw 7 consecutive fastballs. And, you know, the thing that was disappointing is probably the wrong word. The thing that was tough to watch was as you were watching that at bat on Friday unfold, Lenin Sosa was the hitter. You could see he was like, he was getting to those pitches. He was just fouling them off. Like it wasn't like he was late.
Yeah.
He was, I mean, if you're watching from our view, which is directly, you could see the barrel get in there and he's just fouling off. And after, you know, 5, 6, you know, the 7th one, you know, and to be frank, and this is no knock on Lenin, had that been a better hitter, it would have happened before 7 straight. Like, you just can't, and it wasn't just the fact that he threw 7 straight. They were like, split the plate in half right down the middle. And the last one, finally, he paid for it. And the difference was, in yesterday's outing, he was on the corners with the fastball. And he threw some changeups. He threw back-to-back changeups to get the last out of the game. He threw 6 in total in that outing.
Which I love to see, because I told you last week, if the Padres felt like he needed more pitches, they would go for it. Mike Schilt, after the game on Friday, was asked about Robert Suarez. Here's what he said.
I think he's got to be able to mix in another, you know, something else occasionally to righties. He's got the changeup. You know, the ability to throw another pitch is going to be important for him. The fastball velocity's plus, made a lot of good pitches. You know, he's 1 strike twice from, you know, being able to bring it home, but wasn't able to. But, you know, my concern with Robert's not very high.
I love that he says this Friday night, and the next outing they've made the change. They've done something about it.
Yeah. I mean, as he said, his confidence wasn't low, you know what I'm saying, as it pertains to Robert. So it was good to see him make the adjustment necessary, got the out. I honestly don't have a worry about it. I mean, to be fair, if we're just going off of, like, giving up runs, I think Jason Adam gave up a run here this past weekend. If I'm not mistaken, Tanner Scott gave up a run this weekend. So, I mean, it can't just be about that. None of those guys' stuff has changed. It's still the same stuff. Maybe some patterns that have developed, at least as it pertains to Robert, has happened, and it seemed like he made the adjustments, which is fantastic. All right, let's get to break. We're going to try to keep this show on track for once.
Yeah, Chris.
You take a shot at Chris. I wasn't even talking about
him. I know.
Let's get to break. When we return, Mountain West clawing back, trying to get some of their beloved talent back in the fold. We'll discuss when we return. More Gwen
disgusting.
And Chris.
When you think about businesses that are selling through the roof, like Aloe, Allbirds, or Skims, sure, you think about a great product, a cool brand, and brilliant marketing. But an often overlooked secret is actually the businesses behind the business, making selling and for shoppers buying simple. For millions of businesses, that business is Shopify. Nobody does selling better than Shopify, home of the number one checkout on the planet and the not-so-secret secret with Shop Pay that boosts conversions up to 50%, meaning way less carts going abandoned and way more sales going. So if you're into growing your business, your commerce platform better be ready to sell whenever your customers are scrolling or strolling on the web, in your store, in their feed, and everywhere in between. Upgrade your business and get the same checkout experience as business powerhouses like Alo, Allbirds, and Skims. Sign up for your $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/odysseypodcast, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/odysseypodcast to upgrade your selling today. shopify.com/odysseypodcast.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free, all on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Payoff up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
That there was Matthew Scravey's last play at SoFi.
Man.
49ers go down. They get walked down by the Rams who were down big at halftime. Walked the 49ers down in their building. 49er fans like Scravey had the sad face.
Oh, yeah. We definitely had the sad face. It was fun, though. I mean, I
still have to get up to a game at SoFi.
I personally, because I know the morning show talked about going to games and stuff, and I completely understand that, like, going to games sometimes is not the best way to watch football.
Definitely isn't.
But, like, going at least once a year is fun, because it really shows you how good these guys are. And the seats, I was very lucky to get great seats, and you just see everything on the field. Like, from where we were, we saw, like, the passing lanes, and we saw, you know, Matt Stafford getting sacked, and I'm like, oh, gosh, it looks way worse in person than it does on TV.
Even, like, the little baby sacks seem like they hurt.
Yeah, you can hear them hitting the turf. But SoFi itself is a really nice stadium. The only problem I have with it.
Oh, I knew there was a problem. I didn't know what the problem was, but knowing you, I knew there was a problem.
And a lot of people have this problem.
Oh, okay.
It's extremely hot in that place.
Is it?
There's no air conditioning.
There's no circulating air.
There's a roof on it, but the roof allows the sun to come through. So you're like kind of outside, but you're not. You can't feel the breeze where I was sitting. And so it's kind of like a sauna on the field. And we were just talking, all of us in the stands yesterday, like, I wish they would have just, like, made it so the sun doesn't, like, shine on us during the day because it's a clear roof.
I tell you what, man, Californians, they don't like sun directly on them.
It's kind of ridiculous, right? It's kind of ridiculous. Because it was a cloudy day, so all of us were wearing, like, jeans, and some people were wearing jackets thinking it was going to be sort of cold. But no, it was, like, 85 degrees on the field. It's
ridiculous. Yeah, I guess it's one thing to be, like, laying in the sand and, you know, with space.
Yeah.
As opposed to having thousands of bodies, like,
there were 78,000 people there yesterday.
That's another reason why I don't like going to football games. It's just a big crowd.
It's a huge crowd, and there are a lot of drunk people. And I know
mostly
that
drunk people.
I was one of those drunk people back in the day.
I was about to say, what?
No, not yesterday. No, back in the day, I was totally
don't
one of those drunk
me
people.
Like that, dude.
No. There, like, around us, there weren't many fights, but I gotta say, at the Padres game on Friday night, there was a fight in our section or near our section, and it's gotta be one of the most embarrassing things for me to watch, is two adult grown men trying to fight over something stupid. It's so stupid.
It definitely
puts everybody
is
in the area right. in danger.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah, so that's how you're well, at least you got to go to a game, man. That's fun.
Yeah, well, I would also like for the forum up there in Inglewood to not schedule a Nicki Minaj concert at the same time as a football game.
Like, when you say same time, you mean like it's the concert started at the same time as the game? Or
I don't know when the concert started, but there were people filing in as we were filing out.
Oh.
And it took us nearly 3 hours to get home from SoFi.
How long did it take you to get out of the parking lot?
Almost an hour and a half.
Oh, my God.
There was a drunk guy who fell who had, like, an emergency, and I laughed. But once I realized that he was he was, like, being that drunk guy yelling, Rams, go Rams, and then he tripped on the curb and he fell. And I laughed a little bit, and I thought, oh, man, this guy's actually kind of hurt.
He's leaking.
He's kind of hurt over there.
Anyway. Well, I'm glad you had a good time.
Thanks.
Before we went to break, we talked a little bit about the Mountain West trying to claw back some of their teams that have left and are that are possibly leaving. And it seems like that is exactly what the Mountain West is. What are you smiling about there?
Everybody's crushing me for the no air conditioning comment, but you weren't there. You were not there. It's a closed stadium with two small inlets to have airflow in there. Tell me, go sit in that stadium and tell me you're not thinking the same thing. Anyway, yes, the AAC or the Mountain West is trying to fight
yes.
back.
So Air Force has recommitted their standing with Mountain West. Now, if you remember, they were reportedly possibly moving to the AAC.
American Athletic Conference.
That's right. After teams like South Florida, Memphis, San Antonio, Texas, I think. And there was another one I'm missing. It's great.
North Texas. Was it say the teams again?
North Texas was the other team.
Yeah.
They were going to replace those. They were going to be part of the replacement to the AAC. That is no longer the case because it sounds like now that Memphis, Tulane, USF, and Texas, San Antonio are now staying with the AAC. So the Pac-12, that was their play, was to try to go after their big dogs. The reason why the Mountain West story is significant is because they're offering a one-time payment of, I think it's like $10 million to teams to stay in the Mountain West. Why are they doing that? Because the Pac-10 is now going to change their sites off of the AAC core to that Mountain West core. So they're trying to court keeping teams like UNLV in the fold. I already told you Air Force is staying in the fold. I would assume New Mexico.
Yeah.
I would assume they're probably still trying to court Boise State and San Diego State to stay there. Now, San Diego State's already announced they're leaving.
And Boise has too.
And Boise has too. I think Colorado State has also announced.
And Fresno State.
So those teams, I mean, that's really, if we're being honest, outside of UNLV is pretty much the core. Now, UNLV, to my knowledge, hasn't said that they've made a decision one way or another. We know Air Force is staying. I just find this interesting. The Pac-12 is going to be on a search for those two other teams. They have to have the two other teams to get to eight in order to be relevant for that bid spot
yes.
for the playoffs.
I think they'll get to the eight teams, but this is what worried me. And again, they could develop this into a big conference here in the next couple of years. But I don't know why the Pac-12 didn't just join up with the Mountain West if they're just going to have a bunch of Mountain West teams.
Because they don't want all of the teams. They want to be able to split the pot with a little bit less. And I think they also are concerned that the other teams will bring it down. The other teams not named Boise State, San Diego State, Colorado State, who else?
Fresno State.
But you know that is the concern that you got to get to eight because once they get to eight, I think it relaxes because then you can go out and get Gonzaga to add to what would be a pretty good basketball conference as well, and you know that's what it's about really making your conference look good enough so you can maintain the kind of level that you've had in terms of football playoff and being able to kind of pull in some money.
Chris and I talked about this last week, I think, when you were or 2 weeks ago, but I would much rather be on the ground floor of a new conference than to join up with a conference and be the last one in.
Now, mind you, San Jose State's been here before where they've been on the ground floor. They were on the ground floor of the Mountain West when it started. And so, you know, I think this is a little bit different, though. The Pac-12, just name recognition is a different monster than I think San Diego State's ever been involved with. And, you know, as I said when it happened, I think this is a good move for them. We'll see how the rest of it kind of unfolds.
Brandon says, if you're going to invite Gonzaga as a basketball-only school, why not USD as well? That might make it more of a rivalry for basketball.
Again, it's really more about what the school can bring to the conference. Now, you know, outside of baseball that I can think of off the top.
I mean, their football program's good, but it's not.
Division two,
yeah,
really?
It's not. It's one double A.
One double A, yeah.
It's not the highest level.
That's the problem, you know, with it wouldn't be, remember, Pac-12 does not care about San Diego State's rivalry. They really don't.
No.
They're just trying to put together the best conference. I think that's part of what would prevent a USD from getting into that conference.
Same with, I know UCSD, aren't they in Division One now?
Yeah.
That would be another one, maybe. I don't know. But UCSB is there, too. A lot of those West Coast conference schools for basketball might be poached because I know USF, San Francisco, doesn't have a football team, but they have a basketball team.
I think all of the teams that we're talking about going to the Pac-12 have a football. I don't know that you're going to be able to get into this conference without one, unless you are like a national powerhouse basketball-wise, like a Gonzaga.
Rod said Hawaii will be down to play. I don't think anybody wants to go to Hawaii anymore. That's a long trip.
He said Hawaii would be down to play. I'm sure they would.
I'm sure they would, too. But
they definitely would be.
I mean, Hawaii is not the trip that people think it is.
It's a long trip.
It's a long trip. You get there, you play, you come home. It's like it's like 12 hours on a plane for a three-hour game.
Pretty much. All right, let's get to break. When we return, we get... Go ahead.
Well, we have Padres Pen Pals.
I was about to get to that. Go ahead.
But John Fisher... The owner sent out a letter that I have just read.
You want to read it on the other side?
We will read some of it on the other side.
John Fisher does not
disappoint. Owner of the A's.
Does not disappoint.
No.
More Gwynn and Chris on the other side. 2:38 on the clock. Tony Gwynn Jr., Matt Scraby. Just he and I holding it down. Padres will head up to Los Angeles. I don't know why I tried to do that.
Los Angeles.
We'll be leaving a couple hours from now. So, Scraby, you had a letter that you wanted to read.
Yes, I do. I got to favorite this comment real quick because it's a good Padres pen pal question. But yes, I do have a letter from John Fisher.
John Fisher.
The owner of the A's. For the record,
tonight is their last... Is tonight their last home game? Or was
final series?
Final series, excuse me.
Yes.
Final series of the Coliseum's history with the A's in it,
yeah.
At least.
I'm not going to read the whole thing. I'm going to skip around a little bit. But this is
Have you read the whole thing though?
Yes, it's very form. He did not write this.
Okay.
Someone wrote this for him and he said, "Cool, put it out there." Or he didn't even see it. But he said, "This upcoming series with the Texas Rangers will be the final games of the A's storied 57 years in Oakland. And while the A's previously played in Philadelphia and Kansas City, Oakland has been home for the greatest era in the franchise's more than 123 history. I skipped down a little bit. Triumphs, near misses, the 1989 Loma Prieta earthquake in Game 3, the 20-game win streak, a Hollywood movie, and an unmatched cast of players, coaches, and fans. We've had it all." Here's where it turns, everybody. Yeah. "And that, I know, is what makes our departure so very hard. The A's are a part of the fabric of Oakland, the East Bay, and the entire Bay Area. When Lou Wolf and I bought the team in 2005, our dream was to win world championships and build a new ballpark in Oakland. Over the next 18 years, we did our very best to make that happen. We proposed and pursued 5 different locations in the Bay. Mutual and ongoing efforts to get a deal done for the Howard Terminal project, we came up short." Now, the final part of this there's so much in here, I just don't want to read the whole thing. "There are millions of dedicated, passionate A's fans in Oakland and around the world. Countless dedicated staff members in the Oakland Coliseum employees have poured their hearts into this team. Though I wish I could speak to each one of you individually, I can tell you this from the heart. We tried. Staying in Oakland was our goal. It was our mission, and we failed to achieve it. And for that, I am genuinely sorry. Looking ahead, I hope you will join our beloved A's as we move forward on this amazing journey. I hope I'll see you again sporting the green and gold, and I hope we will make you proud. John Fisher.
Yeah, no, John, you're not making anyone proud.
No, buddy. No one cares.
Here's the trip. What he said in there was true. But what he fails to mention in there is that he's the cause of it not actually staying the fabric.
Yes.
Of the community.
Yes.
It'd be like the murderer writing you a letter, but not actually saying that
they're the one that did it. Yeah.
You know what I'm saying? Like,
yeah, he could have been like, hey, I tried. I'm sorry. I failed.
He didn't say I failed.
No, he said we tried. We tried. But a lot of the people that I've seen on X and on the chat are saying this gives very, very, this gives vibes of Dean Spanos' letter back to everybody.
I'm sure people here in San Diego hear this letter and just the hair on their arm stands up. Oof. Because they either in rage or in sadness.
It's... They still don't have a place to play in Las Vegas.
I think this is going to be a mess.
Well, Rob Manfred better figure it out. And he's trying to figure it out to make himself look good at this point.
I won't be surprised if they don't end up in Las Vegas.
You won't be surprised. Because MLB will make it happen because they don't want to be wrong.
Oh, you think Major League Baseball is going to make it happen?
Oh, yeah. They're going to back channel this whole thing.
Well, they got to build a stadium first.
Exactly. They're going to work with the leaders in Las Vegas.
And until I see actual, you know, framework in the ground, I will have a hesitation to believe it's actually happening.
I agree. I got to give the
A's... Because at some point, you got to start building that bad boy. They said 2028?
Six, I think. That's not going to happen.
That's going to be here before you know it.
We're about to be in 2025.
Yeah, exactly.
And so, he doesn't have the money. He doesn't have the votes. He doesn't have anything going on.
Like I said,
right now.
I won't be surprised if something wild happens. I don't know what that wild is, but it contains them not going to Vegas.
It's just so annoying. Just so annoying when these people. Anyway, we can move on now from John Fisher. Just had to read that very heartfelt letter that he sent.
All right,
sent
now
to
you
everybody.
Got a Padres pen pal for us, don't you?
I do. Let's go.
It's time to ask the experts, Padres fans.
I was hoping maybe you can bring a little insight into it.
Write us, tweet us, Facebook us, send a carrier pigeon for Chris. He thinks they're cute. Aww. Padres Pen Pals begins...
Hurt the pelota big time.
Now, on 97.3 The Fan.
I don't know what just happened over there in the corner.
I just hit myself with this racquetball in
my the head?
Yeah.
So, that's a... pretty hard ball, too.
It is. It's not soft.
Yeah. It's not... yeah. All right. Padres Pen Pals.
I'm surprised you have enough questions.
I do. I do have enough questions. I mean, they're all pretty positive questions, but first, this hour is brought to you by Indeed. Need to hire? You need Indeed. Their all-in-one platform helps you attract, interview, and hire candidates all from one place, and Indeed's interview tool lets you schedule and conduct virtual interviews right from their website. Visit Indeed.com/credits. Now, the Rookie of the Year award is going to come down probably to this week, people think, because Paul Skenes has been pitching really well down the stretch. The Pirates have not slowed him down at all. Here's our first Padres pen pal. I probably care too much about this, but I want to say it anyway. I'm still seeing the Paul Skenes people pushing him for Rookie of the Year. No doubt Paul Skenes has been so good this season, and it's really awesome to see. I just truly 100% believe Jackson Merrill is the Rookie of the Year. He has said that it doesn't bother him at all if he doesn't win, but deep down, Tony, do you guys think he cares about winning the award?
Of course, I think there's an element of him that cares. I mean, I think it's not the priority, but I'm sure he cares. If there's sure he wants to win it. But, you know, I want him to win it. I think he's deserving of winning. But I will say, I warned everybody about counting their chickens too early at the beginning of this month. Because there was a whole month of baseball, and you don't know how that's going to turn. And he's done nothing wrong. He's done nothing at all to let up.
Played just the same, if not better.
But It does feel like the temperature is changing a little bit.
Do I think he cares? Yeah. Do I think if he loses, he's going to lose sleep over it? No. Do I think Paul Skeens is deserving of it? Possibly. Do I think that Jackson Merrill is deserving of it? Absolutely. Steven Strasburg sat in that chair. World Series MVP sat in that chair last week, Tony.
Yeah.
And said, in so many words, Jackson Merrill.
You know who else handed at it? Go ahead. Sorry, I cut you off.
No. Go ahead and say it.
No, you go ahead.
Okay,
first.
So Steven Strasburg said in so many words, it's more impressive that Jackson Merrill is able to be this consistent, this young, and play every day.
I thought Manny gave a nod to it the other day, too.
He did.
Everyday player, man. That's.
I thought a lot about what he said about Jackson. He only said like one thing about Jackson Merrill, but he was like, this is what I'm trying to tell Jackson. Like consistency, how to come to the ballpark every day, how to become a professional every day. And that's extremely valuable for Jackson Merrill to have a guy who's done it, played 10
multiple
years in Major
League guys
Baseball.
That have done it in that locker room.
Xander Bogaerts, Yu Darvish, Joe Musgrove.
Yeah, this is a great environment for a young guy who is hungry and cares like he does.
Now, with all of that said, Tony, I said this yesterday to my friend. I think Paul Skeens is going to get the nod because that is a better story for baseball.
I don't know.
I'm going to go in that direction.
I don't know how it's going to end, but I think Jackson should win it.
Yes, his team's competing. The Pirates are not.
But it does feel like the temperature has changed. And I think it speaks to the East Coast, West Coast bias thing. Like,
yeah.
I think the moment... Just think what Jackson had to do in order to even be put on that level.
He had to hit eight walk-off home runs.
Yes, he had to have a week of walk-offs just to put him on the same playing field. And it was almost like it's starting to feel like he has to maintain that same level in order to keep the buzz loud enough to stretch across the whole United States. That's what it feels like right now.
It's disappointing, to be honest. It's very disappointing. I'm trying to figure out it because Jackson Merrill's hitting 290 right now. How many players are hitting 290? Or he's hitting 292, I'm sorry.
I was about to say, don't shortchange my man. He was hitting 294.
He's in the top 14 players in baseball in batting average. There was a tweet yesterday.
Paul Skeens, I don't even believe, has qualified yet for ERA.
No. It says at the top of the stats page every time I log on. It says all-star starting pitcher Paul Skeens does not yet qualify for the ERA title.
I wonder if the last start gets him there.
I don't know. I don't know the rules on that, but that's annoying because he hasn't been able to qualify. If you can't qualify for the ERA title, how can you qualify for Rookie of the Year?
That's not his fault.
It is his fault.
It's not his fault.
I'm trying to find this tweet.
I hope we are reading this wrong. I hope that the buzz doesn't need to span across and that it's just based on what everything they've done, but I know it's not.
Jackson Merrill has a 986 OPS since July 20th. He has a higher OPS than Shohei Ohtani in this time frame. The only qualified hitters with a higher OPS over this span are Aaron Judge, Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Bobby Witt Jr., and Yordan Alvarez. And then Jackson Merrill. Like, that just proves it to me right there.
Crazy.
It is crazy. All right. Let's go to the next. And This person had their son ask them a question that they thought was so smart they couldn't answer it, so they came to us.
All right.
Baseball's a great sport. Not only did I get to watch my heroes growing up, my 11-year-old son is getting to watch his heroes, and I think this is time I will cherish forever. One of his heroes is Robert Suarez, and he said he wants to be the closer one day, but he asked me something the other day, and it not only floored me because his understanding of baseball is higher than I thought, but it was a question I didn't really have an answer for. We were talking about bullpen strategy, and my son asked, quote, why is the closer waste? I think he makes a good point, at least to me. Middle relief is usually matchup based, and the Padres have a righty in Suarez and a lefty in Scott. So why isn't the closer role matchup based, Tony?
It can be. It was. I mean, if you watched the Mets-Phillies game last night, they brought in Diaz in the eighth toward old, not even that old fashioned like 9-out save. It's just a 2-inning save, mm-hmm. 6 outs, based on matchups. Top of the lineup was coming up at that time. I think middle relief is a little different. It's not always top of the lineup. It's lefty righty, and in the middle of the game you have the matchups, right? I mean, the whole point of having a quote unquote closer is that he can get both guys out, and you don't have to then match up.
That's based, his job,
right? That's his job, is to get both lefties and righties out. Difference in the middle relief is part of the reason why those guys are middle relievers is because they may not have the stuff to get through some of the better hitters if they're not matchup based.
Mm-hmm.
Good question, though. I think for closers it's a little bit different matchup based, right? You can come in the eighth and just pitch the eighth because that was the best part of the lineup if you're only going one inning. You know what I'm saying? But that would, you could use your closer in the eighth, as we've seen the Padres do at times this year. I think it can be matchup-based, and sometimes it is. I think it just looks different than middle relievers.
Tap says the Phils brought in Strom for that reason. Adam Klug, our boss, says Braves got a 6-out save from Iglesias yesterday.
So they're confirming what I just said.
They're confirming for sure. I think what Tony said is great. So no. I mean, when I saw this question, when this guy sent it to me, I thought, you know what? What if the bottom of the ninth or top of the ninth or whatever it is, they have two lefties and a righty? Tanner Scott makes more sense for that.
Yes.
And so if Robert Suarez comes in the eighth and Tanner, I wonder if we see this in the playoffs, more of this, because Mike Schilt has stuck with Robert Suarez, and I don't blame him because he's been great, but I wonder if we'll see it more in the playoffs. But then again, they're changing their strategy, which they haven't done all year.
It would take Robert Suarez to have some issues for us to see something different. And then it would have to line up in a way that fits that, right? What you're talking about in terms of
him,
two lefties, and a righty. Whose lineup is that? Well, the Dodgers have a little bit of left-right left there with Ohtani, Betts, Freeman. So, I mean, I guess we could find out.
We'll find out these next week. Games. All right, here we go to the final one. I believe this team is going to win the World Series. I believe this team is good enough to show they're the best team in baseball. However, I have baggage, as Scraby has said many times. My biggest worry is the Padres don't have that same magic they've had all year. I know.
Like when the playoffs start?
Yeah.
Okay.
I know. Nothing has changed, but I am going to irrationally worry until I see them in the playoffs. Tony, what is your biggest worry about the postseason?
I don't have any. Now, that does not mean that what was my man's name who said that?
I didn't put it in. Yeah.
Said writer. Does not mean they're wrong about how they're finished, because we've seen Magic change jerseys come playoff time.
It's true.
You know what I'm saying?
Diamondbacks last year.
How about 22? Padres and Phillies. Both weren't supposed to be there. Magic put on two different uniforms and then wore one in the Padre-Philly series.
I love that.
Do you know what I'm saying?
I do.
So, those things can happen. We've seen, at least the first 2 years of this format, teams with bye go out after their first round of play.
Yeah.
So, you know, anything can happen once you get there. So I don't think it's irrational, but I would say they have given us enough evidence for us to at least go into this experience calm.
In fact, I'm going to tell you at 3:20 why you should have no baggage heading into the playoffs.
Scraby's going to tell you guys at 3:20 why you shouldn't have baggage. I have to get out of here.
You're going to get on a bus.
Got to get ready for this trip to Los Angeles. Scraby will hold it down the rest of the day. I'll be back on with him tomorrow. Scraby, take it away.
All right. When we get back, we got the Daily Gambit. We also have the Survivor update, the Eliminator update. A lot of people are eliminated. It's down to just a few, so I'll tell you next on 97.3 The Fan. It's better over here.
AT&T customers, switching to T-Mobile has never been easier. We'll pay off your existing phone and give you a new one free. All on America's largest 5G network. Visit T-Mobile.com/carrierfreedom to switch today.
Pay off up to $650 via virtual prepaid MasterCard in 15 days. Free phone up to $830 via 24 monthly bill credits plus tax. Qualifying port-in trade-in service on Go5G Next and credit required. Contact us before canceling entire account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance and required finance agreement is due.
For the past three seasons of Gone South, we've covered one story per season. Now, Gone South is back for a fourth season. But this time, we're doing things a little differently. In Gone South Season 4, we'll be bringing you new stories every week with no end in sight. Listen to and follow Gone South, an Odyssey original podcast, on the free Odyssey app and wherever you get your podcasts.
Protect your vehicle's engine with a full synthetic oil change and save with Mobil 1 at O'Reilly Auto Parts. Purchase 5 quarts of Mobil 1 full synthetic motor oil and receive a $10 O'Reilly gift card after rebate. See store for details. With your Mobil 1 purchase, you'll also receive 2x points during Old Rewards Bonus Points Month at O'Reilly Auto Parts.
O'Reilly Auto Parts.